This is a re-recording of Rainer Whiteley talking with Lloyd Chamberlain in April 1961. This was re-recorded in March
1980. Very well, when you first came there, Mr. Whiteley, just tell me what you told me this afternoon about the name and when your
response
first came in.
We left the mail right where the airport is in June of 1900, and came to a place called Sandy Creek, 20 miles south of Athabasca, to start a stopping place. The stopping places on that old landing trail were about 25 miles apart. The first one was at the Sturgeon River, 25 miles from Edmonton. The second one was at Twin Lakes, or Halfway Lakes.
East of Clyde?
Straight east of Clyde, 12 miles. That was Aggie's stopping place. Then my dad started at Sandy Creek. That was known as Whiteley's stopping place. Then my mother and dad named it Perryvale. Perry as the first name of one of my uncles in England, and Vale as it was in the valley, in the Twatnall Valley. Thus they called it Perryvale.
And when did you come
to Perryvale in July 1900. We got there on the first day of July 1900.
Would there be anybody farming there?
No,
there
was nobody between those stopping places. There was no homesteads taken at Clyde or Westlock. That was all one or two at Legal, but nothing north of Morinville to amount to anything. And the same at Athabasca. In and round Athabasca there was nobody. Nobody but a few Indians out around the different lakes. And there was nobody came in till about 1904 or 5. The first settlers started to come in. Willies were in 1903. They were about the first.
Did your dad take out a homestead?
Big bang.
Did your dad take out a homestead?
No, he had already had a homestead in the Mayo. He homesteaded right at where the Mayo Airport is. So he was classed as a squatter and bought the land. After the survey, the government sold him the land for $3 an acre that he was squatted on. Then the next settler that I remember was C.B. Major. He squatted north of Baptiste Lake, where Harry's Soda Green is located now. My dad went to his place in 1905 and bought 2 loads of baled barley. It was hulless barley, and it was not thrashed. He cut it, it was ripe, he baled it with a homemade baler that was operated by means of a long sweep with a tongue on it, and when the team pulled the sweep ahead about 30 feet to push the plunger into the baler, they then had to back up 30 feet to pull the plunger out of the baler to put another feed in. We, 3 of us, baled 2 tons of feed in about 3/4 of a day. So everything was pretty slow motion in those days.
What year? Oh, Mr. Willie came in 1903.
That's right, 1903.
Is he the first one that you remember?
Yes. There was one or two, maybe. I don't remember just who they were, though. There might have been one or two that settled before Mr. Willie, but I don't remember of anybody.
And this Willie land, would that be?
That is where Red Loiselle is now. That's right. He's on the same homestead. Of course, they added a lot to it, you know. When I was speaking of this C.B. Major, going there for feed, Mr. Chamberlain, the route, the only way we could go there in that time was to get on the Athabasca River here at Athabasca, go up the river to Baptiste Creek, then overland to Baptiste Lake. That was the trail. There was a little wagon trail west here from town, but you could only go with a a few hundred pounds. You couldn't haul any load or anything. Otherwise, it was just a pack trail in those days.
At the time, in 1905, for instance, when you were out around Major's farm, was there anything in town here?
Very, very little. The Hudson Bay and Hislop and Nagel were free traders. They had a small store trading post up where their creosoting pulled now, right by there on the bank of the
West
creek,
End.
West end of town here. They were the only two stores, and the Hudson Bay store was about where the McCabe Grain Company is now. And then after the flood in 1904, they built the present store that Mr. Parker owns now.
That's his but on Nagel. Oh,
no,
Bay,
Hudson Bay. Bay. That was when a lot of the settlers came in, or the homesteaders, when the Hudson Bay brought in help to dry the merchandise that got soaked in the flood. They gave Hay and Toby Geit and quite a few others came in for the Hudson Bay, and then they were here for a month or so and homesteaded.
I mean, they came in as help for the day?
That's right. See, when the river jammed and the water backed up from the ice jam, flooded the warehouses, drowned all the freight, they had to bring help in from Edmonton and take the cases of blankets, bales of ribbon and everything, and hang them on the bushes and drag the stuff all over the flat here in the bush to dry it.
Yes,
an interesting thing, Mr. Chamberlain, the time of the flood, we were living, as I say, at Perryvale, and the Hudson Bay manager sent a man on foot down to Perryvale with a letter and asked my father to send the letter to the Hudson Bay in Edmonton as fast as possible, which meant me to go with a saddle horse. I was about 14. I left Perryvale at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and rode the evening and all night, got into Edmonton the next morning at 9:30, delivered my letter. When I was coming out of the store, I met a half-breed, Billy Lutet, who left here at 5 o'clock on foot. And when I was coming out of the store from delivering my letter, I met him walking in with his. He'd made the 100 miles on foot in less time than I made it on a saddle horse.
What year would that be?
1904. That was the time of the flood.
You might say that was perhaps the beginning of the settlement.
I would say so, yes. I would say it was.
Major would have been...
Was in before that, yes.
Yes,
they were in before that. But that was when quite a number came in, and then from there on it started settling up. Amber Valley started settle up in 1910.
You remember when they started coming in?
Yes, I think the spring of 1910. And Jeff Edwards was about the first one that I met.
You remember anything about their meeting?
Well, only that Mr. Edwards was walking from Edmonton to Athabasca and riding here and there with another freighter. But that was his means of travel in those days, was on foot.
Was he by himself?
Yes.
When he first came?
Yes. I think he married after he came here.
Do you remember any thoughts, hearing anybody say anything about what they thought of Negroes coming in at that time?
We were quite glad to see them. We needed settlement, you know, and we were quite glad to welcome them into the district. And I must say, we've never been sorry they came in. We always got along with them, and we didn't have any more arguments than we do with anyone else.
You were telling me this afternoon something of your memory. You have a picture of yourself when you were 12 years old.
Oh, yes. I brought a load of freight. Dr. Thondike and his nephew from Toronto with their supplies in a 16-foot canoe.
You brought it from Edmonton?
No, not all the way. Another man started with him and his team played out. It was very rainy weather and lots of mud holes, and his team played out. and he had to give up the trip, and I loaded the load stuff onto my team and wagon, and I brought him to Athabasca. And I landed in Athabasca with that load the day I was 12 years old.
When would that have been?
It would be 1901.
In July, did you say?
In July. That doctor was so pleased with my abilities for handling a team and landing the load in Athabasca that he took me into the Hudson Bay store and he said, "Now, Raina, this is your birthday. I want you to pick out anything you want." And I looked all around the store and I picked out a dollar and a quarter whip. About that after.
What did they do? Where did they go from Athabasca?
From Athabasca they were going down the river to follow the waterways right round to Winnipeg. But I never heard of them again. I don't know whether they ever made it or not. He promised to write, but I never heard of them again.
Do you remember seeing the first crop taken off? I mean, the first one that you saw?
No, I don't, Mr. Chamberlain. I can't remember any details of the first crop. We started raising a little bit, a few acres at Perryvale about 1904 or 5, but only a few acres, 10 or 12 acres. But I did have a lot to do with the first of the thrashing and all. Billy Smith got the first thrashing machine in the country. He lived at Minook. He was the first settler at Minook. He went there from Athabasca to Minook the fall of 1900 to start a stopping place at the foot of the big hill. That was the name of the stopping place.
Where would that be now?
That was just a mile north of Minook on the old Billy Smith farm there.
Do you know this fellow that lives west of Minook? He's quite a flower gardener.
Yes, not very well though.
You don't remember him? No, I don't. What do you remember about any of the farming operations in the area?
Well, nothing in particular. The first was the thrashing. With Billy Smith hauled his thrashing machine from Edmonton to his place with a team of horses. It was actually hauled up by another old-timer, Bill Brown, uncle to Wilfred Flack. He used to go around all over. The thrashing was done with the one machine all around the country, out around Pine Creek and...
West of Collington.
Mm-hmm. And he used to thrash all around that district. Then South Athabasca, when they started to raise grain a little more there, Mr. Keir and Willie's and some others bought a thrashing outfit. That was the second one in the country.
Then they used to travel around this area?
Yes, they did all the thrashing around west here and east and north. Mr. Pat O'Connor was one of the old homesteaders that I remember, and Phil Doe. Both of them have now passed away.
Was there a land office here?
Yes. There was a land office here in this old telegraph building, and a man by the name of Jim McKernan was the land agent. And he was also the telegraph operator, telegraph agent. And the post office, I think.
Did you take out a homestead yourself?
Yes, I homesteaded in 1912. Almost straight east of here.
Do you remember anything about taking out your papers? Anything that's worth mentioning?
Well, yes. The only thing I remember that was of importance, I filed first on a quarter just west of Athabasca. And the department sent my application back and $10 and informed me that it was an odd number. And they were not open for entering them, but they would notify me as soon as it was. So I waited a year or so waiting for the notification and didn't get it. And when I had inquired, they had forgotten, and it was homesteaded by another chap. In the meantime, the boom came along, and he sold it for $19,000.
You were going to buy it for 10.
I was going to buy it for 10. Yes, that's right. So that was quite memorable.
Do you remember anything about the land in right in town? Was there a boom on at that time?
No, the boom didn't hit here till about 11. About the time the railroad came in, it started to boom. And then it did really boom. It went wild, you know. I bought the place where Mr. Johnson is living now. That is the old Daniel property. I bought that lot from the Hudson Bay Company for $150 and kept it 1 year and sold it to Mr. Daniel for $2,100. Then I took the $2,100 and bought five lots. And about 4 years after, I let the town take them back for taxes. So
when did you take out another homestead after that one?
No, I never filed on that. I filed later, the following year, in 1912, I filed east of Athabasca and proved that up and kept it.
Who else was around that area when you filed?
There's an awful lot of old timers. Tom Plumley is still there, and Chester McCutcheon. But the others are all almost south of there, 4 miles, and Spires, they're still there. But most of the old timers are gone. Some of them sold their places and left, and others have passed on.
Did your family ever move up here, or did they stay at
My family? Perryvale. No, they stayed at Perryvale. And until 1917, the railroad came through about 1911 through Perryvale, and then there was no more stopping place business, and we left there in 1917. Mother and Dad went to Edmonton, and two of the girls, and Mrs. Myton, married Guy Myton, went out by Minook, and I was out on the homestead. And,
do you remember anything about the first farm equipment saw? How it came into the district?
Well, yes, the first farm equipment was hauled in from Edmonton with teams, and this Jim Daniel was the international agent in Athabasca, and a man by the name of Watt.
When would that have been?
I think was about probably 1907 or 8. Yes. The one odd situation now is that seems odd to me. In 1910 or 11, the end of the steel was at Minook. And Mr. Faulkner came in 10 and opened a hardware store here. And that following winter, I unloaded for him a carload of barbed wire, a carload of stoves, carload of roofing and paper, a carload of nails, and a mixed car of various hardware, making five carloads I unloaded from the end of the steel at Minook. That there seemed to be more people in the district then than there is now. All that stuff was sold. I suppose the difference is now it comes in smaller quantities and more often. It seemed a large amount, didn't it, to haul in one winter. Five carloads.
And most of that went around Minook?
All around here. No, I hauled it from Minook here.
Yeah.
Sold right out of the store here.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
What did you say that man was?
Frank Faulkner.
Oh. Mm-hmm. But did the international here,
Mr. Daniel. Jim Daniel.
The one that lived up
That's right. Yes. Day. Yes. That's right.
Remember anything about the first livestock?
No, it came in so slowly, you know, that I don't remember too much how it started. I know Mr. Mintz, Bryce's brother and his uncle, bought a bull in Edmonton and walked him.
Started that William Harper?
No, that was William, yes, William
Harper.
That's right. And then Pollock. And they walked this bull from Edmonton. I started with him in the hot summer and walked him too far, and he died.
When would that have been, I wonder?
Well, that must have been 1904 or 5, along there. Maybe 6. Yeah. Most of the business in those days was the freight roads, you know, freighting and the travelers on the road. That was the most of the business.
As far as freighting by land, this was the end of it.
That's right, yes. We had to... I freighted for 10 years for the Hudson Bay and Revions. I used to freight from Edmonton to Athabasca on wagons in the summertime, and from Athabasca to Peace River Crossing in the winter, up the river and across the lakes, and to Wabascow and McMurray. Camp out nights in the winter.
Do you remember anything about the first clearing and breaking?
Well, I broke the first 4 acres for Lewis Wood on his homestead, and I broke the first 4 or 5 acres for Jack Secord. That's on the farm where Richie Pratt is now. And I broke the first land just south of town, 2 or 3 miles here, for George Hess. And that all was about, I would say, 1906 or 1907, along there.
Would that be on that Hess land that's down in the valley?
Yes, and that broke right on a little higher up behind the Plano Mill there. There's a 15-acre field there. I broke that. Three horses. Brownies, that's right.
What did you use for the...
Three horses and a little iron beam plow. There were no tractors in those days at all.
How long would it take you to do 4 acres?
About 4 days. Do about an acre a day, yeah.
What was the price of it then?
$4 an acre. Yeah, but you did it cleared for $3 an acre by hand, and then $4 an acre for breaking.
Did each farmer pretty well do his own?
Yes.
Clearing?
That's right. That's right.
By 1912, do you remember what was in Athabasca, in the town at that time?
Well, yes, there was. There was a lumber yard then. Jack Evans was running a lumber yard for the Crown Lumber Company. There was a blacksmith shop. George Lang had come in.
Jack Edwards from Westertown?
No. Evans. Jack Evans,
no.
Old town clerk.
Evans. And this Lang you're talking about, is that the fellow that lived...
East here, George Lang, that's right. He came in, started a blacksmith shop. So we had a blacksmith shop and a lumber yard and 2 good feed barns and two hardware stores. Quite a little improvement, you know, in the business.
Remember any particular record crops for that time?
There were not any record crops at all in the early days because it was too hard and took too much time to work the land down. Most of the farmers didn't have a disc to cut the breaking up sufficiently, so that we didn't get any big crops until on after 1915, 16, along there. Then I remember several good crops. Tom Plumley had wheat that went 62 bushels to the acre, and they sent a surveyor out to measure the land to verify there was no mistake. And myself, I had 100 acres of oats that I thrashed 110 bushels to the acre off 100 acres. I had 300 bushels of wheat at Collington 1 year that won 46 bushels the acre on 320 acres. So there was 1,030. So there were a lot of good crops in this country. Many times we had, within the last, about 5 years ago, we had 70 bushels of barley to the acre.
In the early days when they first started farming, we'll say by 1910, what did they do with their crops, with their grain, when they...
By that time, there was sufficient travel on the river and the freight trail to to handle what grain we raised. It was chiefly oats and fed to the freighting horses. There was a feed store started in town that used to buy up the grain and then sell it to the freighters and the travelers. There was nothing shipped out until after the railroad came in. Then as soon as the railroad was in, there was an elevator put up and we had a good ready market then for the grain from then on. Of course, the same with stock in the early days. There was no way to... It could only handle what stock could be consumed in the district. But there never seemed to be too much. There seemed to be lots of people. There never was enough eggs or butter or anything like that, or poultry, you know. In fact, we didn't know in those days a hen could be made lay in the wintertime. We thought they only laid in the summer, you know.
Do you remember anything particular about anybody staying overnight at your folks' stock place?
Oh, yes.
Somebody that you knew was coming to look for land?
Yes, quite often there'd be a bunch of stay there. There was a man by the name of Wood that lived at Carlington, and he acted as a guide, land guide. He'd go to Edmonton's land office and pick up 8 or 10 men, bring them into the country, and go around and look at the land, try and satisfy them, you know, charge them $25 a quarter section if they filed, and 20 if they didn't file. And so we met most of them that way.
Anything else you can think of about farming operations that you particularly remember sticking in your mind?
I don't think so. There was always some comical things. As tough as the times were, you know, there were some funny things. I remember one time when we came from the homestead, Plumley boys and I, a colored man by the name of Milton, George Milton, was riding home with us at night, and we had to leave the detour off the road round a swamp through Chester McCutcheon's place. And we got the team mired down, and George Milton got out in the dark, and he said, "Well, what kind of a bullpen is this we're into?" So that there was always a laugh. You always got a good laugh here and there. I remember another time in the early days, a chap came to the place and bought a milk cow from my mother. She was a good, quiet cow and bob-tailed. And another Englishman who was running a stopping place met him on the road with a cow and told him that the cow would never be any good for milk cow because she was bob-tailed and the sun would shine on her bag and the milk would be sour. So he brought the cow back and asked for his money back.
Do you remember a blacksmith living up southwest of town on Joe Jules or near Jules?
Pete McDougall, yes. Yes. Pete McDougall was one of the very first settlers. He used to be a blacksmith with the RCMP at Fort Saskatchewan and came up one time with one of their teams to Athabasca and laid over here a day and went looking round for a homestead, and he found a place suited him where Joe Jewell is. And
I wonder when that would have been, any idea?
No, I have no idea what year. I would imagine it was along about 1902 or 3. I think so. There was quite a little improvements done all the time for the little bit the government had to work with in those days. In 1904 they built the railroad, not the railroad, I mean the telegraph line from Edmonton to Athabasca. Mr. Willie and his son Scotty and his two boys took out the poles for 50 miles from halfway lakes to Athabasca. Then the next winter they took out poles from Athabasca to Smith. That helped a little, made work for quite a few men, brought a little more money into the district.
How was the harvesting done, the first harvest?
Well, anybody that had a binder, he cut his own crop, and then as many as... for the neighbors. The neighbors, if they didn't have any money, they'd come and stoop his grain and help him thrash and so on. I remember the first binder I got, I cut 7 homesteaders' crops that fall with 1 6-foot binder and 3 horses. Each one would have 10 or 15 acres, you know, and I cut my own, and then while they... A couple of them stooped out, I went and cut their crops. And
at the east of town?
Yes, yes. And that's the way everything was handled, you know.
Before anybody had a binder, how did they handle the crop?
Well, there was, I only remember the one place that they thrashed any by hand. That was with a flail or a poverty stick. And that was at this C.B. Major. He had a patch of ground cleared off in the winter and put water on and froze it solid and then put a little grain on it and thrash it with a stick. But I don't remember any round here. I think the first thrashing was with a thrashing machine.
How would he have cut it? With his eye and bundle it up?
Yes. He cut his with a mower and raked it up like
hay. Put it on this little just patch of ground.
Yeah. And fork it on, a few forkfuls on there and spread it out thin and beat it with a stick. The flail.